the precaution of looking up the word in the dictionary.
It seems that I was using it correctly, it's an unreal creature of imagination, a mere wild fancy, or an unfounded conception. That's the ordinary modern use of the word. On the other hand, what's been said of eating the gnawing on the over some time is a more literal meaning of the word. It refers to a fabled fire-breathing monster of Greek mythology, with a lion's head, a goat's body, and a serpent's tail, or according to others, with the heads of a lion, a goat, and a serpent, killed by Bellerophon. Figuratively, it also means a horrible and fear-inspiring phantasm. Okay, so... Okay, well, this
paper may be on the web later today. And someone was wondering, well, is it reasonable to talk about the classification?
I was thinking of having as a subtitle a classification of all separable meanable Caesar algebras, and it seems to me there's been some discussion of what that might be. But this, in fact, would be misleading, because in fact what I have is a classification of all separable Caesar algebras, and of course what this is, I have to explain what it is, and why it might be worth talking about.
Well,
it's worth talking about because it reduces the more sensible question of classification, or the more technical question of classification, it reduces it purely to a question of finding an equivalent reformulation of a certain category.
If you look at the category of separable Caesar algebras, you put in amenable if you like, then there's a functor to another category, which I won't say too much about, except that it's smaller. And this has a precise meaning, because in fact, every inner automorphism is killed. And furthermore, this is realized inside the sub-Caesar algebra, say whole infinity. Then this category can be viewed as a poly space. Well, this category can also be viewed as a poly space. In other words, this classification theory has nothing to do with looking at non-smooth isomorphism. The non-smooth space of isomorphism classes.
That's one reason to look at this approach.
Another reason is that, set theoretically, you can look at isomorphism classes. There's nothing wrong with that, set theoretically. And so if you look at the category, this is considered as a category. If you consider it as a category with isomorphism, only with isomorphisms, then you divide out all the automorphisms, and you get a new category where the objects are isomorphism classes. And so fine and good if you can study it. But it's more interesting to look at the category with homomorphisms. And then if you try to divide out by automorphisms and just look at the quotient category consisting of isomorphism classes, and then with some mythological image of homomorphisms in that quotient, well then that's just turned out to be just
an unfounded conception.
And let me explain why. All right. So suppose we try the the naive approach, or we just look at isomorphism classes. And that means that the arrows are going to be homomorphisms, modulo automorphisms. Okay, so this is a single arrow, so it has a name. And this is just a set of all the automorphisms of the tail object, and this is a set of all automorphisms of the head object. By the way, aren't we getting heads and tails coming in? Well, okay, but maybe they're all at one end. In fact, that's going to come in too. Don't worry. Here's one of these naive morphisms where you say you can just divide out by all automorphisms. But what happens if you compose two of them? Well, so you have another one here, and it's got the same mass of automorphisms hanging on the tail, and it has another one on the head. But if you look at this combined set of homomorphisms. This is A with a single one, B with a single one, and this is now a set of homomorphisms. But it's not of the same form as the original one. So what are your morphisms? Unless you can do the same, the finite chains and things like that, well, I'd say forget about them. And by the way, this difficulty already happens with sets. Take the category, forget about central velocities now, but look at the category of sets with set maps. Then if you have, then in other words, the product, I'm going to show you, prove to you that the product of two equivalence classes is not a single equivalence class. Well, so you take two sets. If you have, then there exist two, say you have a single set. Two sets, not so small. Then there exist, in fact, I want three sets. There exist two non-constant mappings such that the product one way is the product is also non-constant, but if you put in an automorphism here, you can make the product constant. Okay, that's obvious. I mean, on the other hand, if you just look at injective maps, if you only look at injective maps, then that won't happen. And so that's a perfectly good category. And if you take injective, the category of injective maps between sets, and divide it by automorphisms, then you get the quotient category of is the one we know about, namely the category of cardinal numbers, where the maps are simply majorization relation between two cardinal numbers. By the way, I think often when cardinal numbers are introduced just as equivalent classes of sets, it's the fact that you need to know which one is bigger than the other is sometimes lost in the scramble. But this approach takes care of that. So that proves that you really need to know the homomorphisms, not just the isomorphisms. And you have to be able to take care of it. So for sets, you have to be careful. You have to do it with injective maps. And also with groups. With Schuster algebras, it's important. It's a mess too. So, in other words, dividing out by automorphisms is just asking for trouble. In two ways, in two separate ways, because of the world, losing the nice world structure, and then losing the category, losing the category structure. So what am I proposing to do? Well, it's not surprising. Divide out by inner automorphisms. So look at inners. Look at all the inner automorphisms, and then all the inner automorphisms. Well, in this case, it's really reminiscent of the two descriptions of the chimeric. One is where you have something at the head and something at the tail, something awful at the head and something awful at the tail, and the other is where you just have something awful at the head, several different heads. And they don't say anything about the tail at all. Well, obviously, with inter-automorphisms, that's what you have, right? You can just push them right through. If you have a homomorphism between two CCLs, or between two groups, between almost anything where it makes sense to have an inter-automorphism, then if you have an inter-automorphism on the tail, you can push it through with the same body and end up with the some other inter-automorphism instead on the head. But then it's clear that morphisms compose to morphisms, right? Because you look at one morphism and you look at another morphism, then you just take all these ones, all these new tails, and put them through up here. So you have no single standard morphism. So that's my observation. So what it means is divided by the inner automorphisms, then you get a functor, and then it's not hard to prove. It's not hard to prove that you divide it by the inner automorphism. And then you get what you might call classification of the functor. Which means that if you have two objects upstairs, and if they're isomorphic downstairs, then they're isomorphic upstairs. That's pretty easy. This construction, however, still suffers from one of the disadvantages I mentioned at the beginning. Namely, if you divide out just by inner automorphisms, then that's also going to destroy the Polish group structure in general. Right? So we should be dividing out by the closure of inner automorphisms. Well, then it doesn't quite work. But what you do is something which is, what you should do is something which is again quite familiar. You just introduce an equivalence relation between two morphisms. You have A and A prime. One way of saying it is you just pass through the closures of these equivalence classes. Okay, so you just say that the two morphisms are. Your new quotient morphisms are just going to be the closures. If you take your morphisms module of linear automorphisms, and then you take the closure in the topology of pointwise convergence and norm. So that's, and then that's the quotient category. The objects as before, the objects are the same as before. We know that in the category the objects don't matter. The objects are not what determine the character of the category. What you're getting either when you divide it by inner ones or by the closures, or what you get when you're passing to just Errol's modulo inners, or Errol's, or the closures of those equivalence classes, especially when you're passing to those, what you get is a nice category. The objects, of course, are just the original Fischer algebras. It's almost as if you take an analogous construction is if you take Fischer algebras and then you take the KK classes between them, right? I mean, this is analogous. But the reason to talk about this one in particular is that it still is a classification function. I mean, in the completely general separable case. What is the status of that theorem? Okay, so it's a classification function when you take the closure of the morphisms modulo inners. That's the. Is that a clear statement of the term? It's as simple as that. You take the category of separable algebras and homomorphisms, and you form a quotient category where the objects are the same, and the morphisms are just the closures of morphisms modulo inners. We'll talk about the inners come from joining the unit. Multiplier inners is a different kind of which. It's an inners from joining the unit.
Maybe
too many morphisms in any category. Well, identity. But too many for what? I mean, are you just talking about aesthetics or something more wild? I mean, those. Right? I mean, the classification functor is a theorem, and this is a theorem, and it takes a proof. In fact, the proof is so difficult that it was turned down by the Journal of AMS as not difficult enough. The whole paper rested on the non-triviality of the proof in that theorem.
And not 50 years of operator algebra history. So, which I, so I obviously wasn't able to, I wasn't eloquent enough in explaining what the point I was making. Either that or the whole thing is pretty simple. So. Okay, so let me get some examples, applications of the theorem. Okay, I was even planning to write down a shorter time period outside, like 5:15 to 5:45, but then I figured that there was a risk that you might hold me to that. Okay, so... So example one is countable groups. So I've mentioned separable Eastern algebras so far, but see, I guess I said, I was raising the question at the beginning, I mean, are you going to be happy when I state this theorem or not? And obviously it comes down to, and maybe Marius is maybe there's some indication of Marius's feelings in this direction from his questions, but it comes down to the question, how happy you are with this classifying category. And now, by the way, of course, it's an abstract category. The morphisms are not, the objects are happen to be sets, but the morphisms have got nothing to do with the set structure. They're not set maps. Of course, every abstract category is equivalent to a concrete category. End of sub. Well, I guess my point is that we can hope that in special cases there are more rewarding special categories, concrete categories that are equivalent to this abstract category. And so, and one example which is well. It's pertinent to example one, which is countable groups. So there's a well-known category, subcategory of separable CC algebras, namely the AF algebra. Let's take the stable ones, just for convenience. So the ones that are absorbed in terms of the absorption concept, recently. These are the ones that absorb the compact objects, the algebra compact objects. And so you look at this classifying function, and so the by the way, you have an intertwining argument. This is basically an encapsulation of my intertwining argument, the fact that this is a classifying function. And there's even an abstract version of it too. Well, I guess I have to formulate an abstract version of it, I'm going to have all these countable groups. So the abstract version is you have an arbitrary category, and you have some axiomatically determined inner automorphisms that have the property that something downstairs goes upstairs. So an inner one at the tail goes forward to an inner one at the head. And that's the only algebraic aspect. Then you assume that's enough to get that you have a classifying category if you just divide it by the inners. And if you want to take the quarters, then obviously you have to have a topology on the spaces of morphisms. Well, if the multiplication between the three fixed objects, if multiplication is continuous, then in fact you still get a functor. The argument that you get a functor to a nice smaller category, that still works. It's not enough, as far as I know, it's not enough to get the classifying function if isomorphism classes, distinct isomorphism classes are taken to distinct isomorphism classes. So you take that topology and you assume it comes from a complete metric. Obviously, if you're going to prove some existence there, you need completeness. In the Twilight argument, it's a kind of distance there, like a contraction, like it might be a plot, like a contraction mechanism. And so you have, and in fact, you need a contraction property. You need that, although not strict contraction. So you need, besides completeness of the metric, you need that if you have two morphisms A and B between the same pair of objects, then you have and then you look at the distance between them. You look at the distance between them, which is given, and then you compose each of them with the same inner automorphism on the codomain side.
then they've got to be just as close, composing by an inner automorphism should be isometrical, so it should preserve the distance between the two arrows. That's, if you assume that, then you can do the interfining argument. And it's slightly, it's a little trickier than perceived algebra, because you have to play off the, if you're only going to use the great continuity together with the isometry just for inner automorphisms, it's just more, okay, so in other words, I can't do it, I don't help right now. But this proof is in the paper. Actually, it takes, maybe even my mistake was to make it too long, because this obviously distracted the referee. Anyway, and also, I made an error. I said at the beginning that the main point is that this is a category. The proof that the natural functor distinguishes isomorphism classes is, as will be seen, not new. Okay, so now I was going to talk about an example. If you take stable AF algebras, say stable AF algebras,
separable AF algebras.
Okay, well then you get something over here. Then this category is in fact equivalent to the category of dimension groups, okay? Countable dimension groups. Reese-Bielian ordered groups, torsion-free ordered groups with the Reese interpolation property and with what Fuchs 50 years ago called the property being isolated, which means unperforated. If two times something is positive, the thing itself is already positive. So it seems to me that the fact that you can express your classification theorem for AF algebras in this way somehow is some selling point for this abstract category. You just say that the abstract classifying category is equivalent this leads up now to example one. It turns out that there's a class of, no, I'm afraid, I apologize, a number of you may have heard me make go through some of these spiels before, but the countable groups in general, maybe that is a chimera, but even finite groups, even finite simple groups. I mean, the category of finite simple groups, up to say with morphisms up to inner automorphisms, that's not known. I mean, even when the set of morphisms is non-empty between a certain pair of objects, that's not known. But there's a certain special category for which it's things were simple way. If you take finite direct products of the alternating groups. Alternating groups A n greater than or equal to 5. Okay, we'll now take groups like that and then take inductive limits of sequences of those. Doesn't that remind you a bit of an AF algebra? Well, okay. Well, certainly, you can. It's an example of this abstract classifiable category. Abstract classifiable category, where you have morphisms and inner automorphisms and a topology on the morphisms. Such as multiplication is continuous and the metric is the metric not canonical. But if the group is countable, you can count it, right? And then the metric is canonical unless it's counted. And that gives you, and then this isometry with that convenient natural choice of metric, the multiplication on the right on the codomain side by inner automorphism is isometric. So it's a classifiable category in the sense of this abstract classifying theorem. So you get an abstract classifying category. Well, lo and behold, it's actually, what I want to now do is take arbitrary AF algebras, okay? then you got a certain category down here, which is dimension groups with certain additional structure, namely certain special subset of the positive pole. Okay, well, if you do, and it's interesting that you have to do that, that's what you have to do. But if you do that, then, I mean, for the AF algebras, we do that for the AF algebras ahead of time. So I didn't quite prepare the blackboard. Personally, Diaconus would have done it much better. He gave a very interesting lecture here recently. Now that I have this, the concrete analog of the abstract classifying category for arbitrary AF algebras, in fact, it's exactly the same for this class of groups. So if we call this class of groups A, then this is the classifying category for A. In other words, it's exactly the same as for AF algebra. This is something you can do this at home if you want. And actually, unfortunately, someone did. Added November 15th, 2007, after this paper was submitted, the author discovered the article by so-and-so-and-so-and-so on classification of inductive limits of direct product of alternating groups, Journal of London Math Society, January 2007, which shows that the groups considered above are classified up to isomorphism by their equivalence classes of Bradley diagrams. Well, okay, but what I can say is that they don't get it from this firm. And there are a couple of distinguishing features that my approach had. They somehow felt that they had to restrict to what you might call diagonal maps. But in fact, every map is conjugate to a diagonal map, so it's they didn't defer that. The only reason you're mentioning things like that is to show I have been thinking about it myself. Okay, well that's example one. And then, example two is, calibrally generated algebras. Well, maybe I'll just leave that one out. Except that it could include the algebraic versions of AF algebras, of course. I don't know any other algebras it should include. Example three, I've already mentioned, that's separate bases to algebras. And again, maybe it's obvious what the metric is on the morphisms, except it's not natural until you choose a countable dense subset of the unit ball. And well, even then you still have to count that. You take that countable dense set and you have to count it. And then once you've done that, then you put in a 2 to the minus n in front of the expression with the nth element and comparing the distance between the two morphisms on that element. Some of those numbers is a metric, which is obviously preserved by inner automorphisms on the codomain side. And makes multiplication continuous. So that's example three. And you can described the concrete analog or a concrete analog of the abstract one in a certain case. Well, there are lots of other cases. Maybe this is something else you can do at home too. To look at cases where there is a concrete category. And then see how you have to push and pull it to coincide with the abstract category. Don't forget that here you have a uniqueness term as well as an existence term. So the for instance for simple AT algebras, as Klaus and Caroline and Nielsen pointed out, the K0 and K1 groups, which kind of traces in on the classification. they're not enough for the classification if you include morphisms. You've got to include algebraic K1. How's the word algebraic K1? If you put that in, then I guess that would be the exactly equivalent to the abstract cross-plane category. That would be. So in other words, we're now talking about, what we've been talking about now is this horse trading between categories where the received algebra completely disappeared, except just coincidentally enabling the objects of this one. But the inner algorithms have completely been washed out. And this is just it's almost a question of haggling over the bill.
Mathematicians like to do that too. All right. Well.
So, what other examples?
Well, okay. Well, what other examples? Maybe I should stop right here, because the conference is not. Well, okay. Now, here's number four is somehow related to Cista Africa. Well, number five is a bit. It's getting a bit off the subject. Example number five is phonemic algebra is a separable pre-dual. Well, I have to make a slight adjustment to that. It's pointed phonemic algebra, okay? Just like pointed topological spaces. So you take a phonemic algebra or a separable pre-dual, and you fix a faithful normal state, and that's the information which has to be preserved. Your category is phonemic algebra homomorphisms, which preserve which are compatible with the point structure, the faithful normal state, in the strongest sense, involving the modular homomorphism groups. So that's so that example works out as well. And I suppose, I would hope that this was more or less, it would be more or less, the phonemic algebra experts would be more or less equanimous with this slightly modified structure. I mean, in topology, whether it's a space or a pointed space, is that a big deal? Well, the trouble is, I still haven't been able to prove that the,
for phonemic algebras, that the, say you take a minimal phonemic algebra, then you look at the abstract classifying category, which this theorem gives you. Is the concrete category just closed? Well, if you take isomorphisms, the classical theory shows that for isomorphisms the answer is yes,
but for homomorphisms that's still
under negotiation. The one thing. When you talk about the homomorphisms that would come from homomorphisms between closed, it's not enough for the homomorphism that's something that's going there, because I really ought to even consider one which is stronger than, a condition which is slightly stronger than preserving given faithful normal state. It should also, it should actually act on the flow of weights. That can be formulated in a more elementary way. But if you look at, of course, the isomorphism automatically do. But if you look at homomorphisms, some pointed phonemic algebra, homomorphisms that act on the flow of weights. Well, then you get the abstract classifying category, and it seems a reasonable conjecture that it's equivalent to the category of flows with natural morphisms there. Right, what I'm hoping is that the techniques of Takasaki and Sutherland and and Kawagayashi carry through. Well, one more example, which is more related to Cista algebra. And that's Hilbert Lodge. Well, we took the modules over and fixed these algebra. So it naturally would take them to be counted, we generate. The least algebra doesn't have to be separable, but you take the modules to be counted, we generate. Just as what happens in effect when you define the quintsimi. And that's another way of looking at the quintsimi. So the category I'm thinking of now, just finally, very briefly, is, there's not much to say. There are some technical aspects. The category is these Hilbert's, commonly generated Hilbert modules. And the morphisms are not just arbitrary, what are the homomorphisms? They're what you might call embeddings. So isometric mapping between them. It's like with the sets. In fact, it is, of course, analogous to the sets. Because the Hilbert space has a dimension and so on. The Hilbert module of the complex numbers is the Hilbert space, and that's determined by its dimension, so it's very much like sets. And I said I had to restrict to injective maps for sets. I want to restrict to isometric mappings from one Hilbert module into another. But if you do that, then again you get appropriate notes of inner automorphism. Now that's pretty simple. You join the unit to the algebra compact and the morphisms, and then you take a unitary element of that C-star alpha. That's your inner automorphism. So you get the inners pushed through. If you have a serpent, if you have a serpent at the end of the goat, then you push it through, and you get a lion on the front. So you get a classification theorem for Hilbert modules.
So you get an abstract
classifying category. So is there a way of computing it? Well, I don't know. But if the C-star algebra A has stable rank 1, then it's much simpler to compute. Because there's a theorem that, in that case, in the abstract classifying category, if you have two objects, either there are no arrows between them, or there's exactly one arrow in each direction. If you look at arrows going forward, if you look at arrows going from A to B, then either there is no arrow at all, or there's exactly one. Okay? But then that doesn't sound a lot like sets? I mean cardinal numbers. You have two cardinal numbers. Either there's an arrow from one to the other, or there's exactly one, which is just saying that the first one is less than or equal to the second one. And that the Hilbert spaces were a special case. It's true, but this is only countably generated Hilbert spaces. So this is the cardinal theory of countable cardinal numbers. So it's a little primitive from that point of view. But it works for arbitrary C-star algebra of stable rank 1. I just stated the property of the abstract category, haven't I? That every pair of objects has at most one arrow between the first one and the second one. I haven't actually given you a convenient parameterization of the objects in general. Even for a C-star algebra stable rank 1, I guess it's not that easy to tell when two Hilbert modules are isomorphic. Except unless the base space, unless it's a commutative C-star algebra with one-dimensional base spectrum. I've run out of examples, so thank you.
Two questions. First of all, this question, what's number 4? Isn't this restriction to injected gas, though, contrary to your philosophy of anamorphisms rather than...
Well, I think it makes, I think you, I think already from cardinal numbers, you can just say that it is a big difference between looking at isomorphism classes of sets and at the same time keeping track of which one is bigger. That's maybe that's all it comes down to.
Okay, so let's find the concrete. Well, you've done that in some cases, yeah.
Right.
Okay, fine.